week. I've entitled this Bible study, Yahweh's Family Circle. I remember in the old days when I was growing up, it's old days now. Welcome, Mrs. McKelvey.
Oh, thank you. Shalom.
Yes, we're just getting started. I've entitled the message, Yahweh's Family Circle. I said, I remember in the old days, there was this comic that was in the magazine that would come in the newspaper called The Family Circle. And it had all of the father, mother, and all these kids. And I mean, it was just a big family. And when I think back on those days, I think of how much fun we had, you know, as a family, and what Yahweh is trying to get us to see as a family. And in Yahweh's family circle, you know, we have, you know, like I said, we have Yahshua at the head, Father Yahweh, but each one of us has a purpose as a part of the family that, you know, he wants us to fulfill. And what happens is that when people miss what it is Yahweh wants them to do, where he wants them to be in that picture or in that family, they lose focus. And when they lose focus, it causes drama or other problems in the family. And we'll get into that a little bit more later. But Yahweh cares for our family more than we do. Think about that. He also loves them more than we do. Okay? We must continue to pray for all our family, those whom we love the most, and those whom we love the least. You know, and it's difficult as a parent, but as a parent, it's very difficult to say that you love one child more than the other, but it is very much so that we have our favorites, you know, regardless of what, you know. My daughter keeps telling me, Kaya, she always tells me and my wife, you know, I know I'm daddy's favorite. I know I'm your favorite. You know, and she'll say it around the others. You know, we get together every Friday night to open the Sabbath, and, you know, it goes on. And Jay, when Jay says, well, look, I'm just going to call Amanda or Kaya and ask them to ask you to do something for me. You know, he wants some work done on his house. He says, if Amanda asks, I'm over there. I'm getting it done. If Kaya asks, I'm doing whatever. So Jay says, all I have to do is call Amanda or Kaya to get you to do something for me. So the boys are feeling some type of way. But girls are special to dads. They always are. That's just the way it is, okay? But I love my sons as well, okay? But today we're going to look at an issue in a particular family of Yahweh's family circle, which is David, okay? David loved Absalom. Okay, and Absalom means father is peace, or my father is peace. Okay, but Yahweh chose Solomon, and he gave Solomon another name because David named him Solomon, but Yahweh called him Jedidiah. Okay, which means Jedidiah. Here it is, means beloved of Yahweh, which is almost the same meaning as David's name, Yahweh, which is loved of Yahweh. But beloved of Yahweh, or darling of Yahweh, that's what Jedidiah means. Now, we know that Absalom was one of David's favorites. He really cared for Absalom. Absalom was the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur. So he was not only a prince of being his father's son, but he was going to be a prince even in the house of Talmai, the king of Geshur. So he had royalty on both sides of the family, you understand? Whereas though Solomon, or Jedidiah, was the son of Bathsheba. And Bathsheba was also of a royal family. And in a couple different encyclopedias, they have different renderings of who Ahithophel was. But he was one of David's counselors, and he was a well-respected counselor of David, okay? But Ahithophel, and his name means brother of foolishness, okay, or brother of ruin or folly. And he was a wise counselor. In other words, his name was just the opposite. The definition of his name was just the opposite of what he was. He was a very devout and wise man. But what happened is when David sinned with Bathsheba, who was his relative, it turned this man. And like I said, this is one big family. You have to understand. So when these things took place, it left a bitter taste in this man's mouth. And when the rebellion came along with Absalom, he went with Absalom, okay, and was given him wise counsel, all right? But Yahweh turned some things around. We're going to look at this in a little bit more detail. But Ahithophel, okay, being Bathsheba's, according to this, they said father or grandfather, but I don't think it was her grandfather based on the timing. He could have been, but I'm just saying I got two different renditions. And then I had something that I studied that said he was the uncle, her uncle, okay? But he was her relative. And he got upset because David killed her husband, Uriah the Hittite. But Bathsheba was his family. So Solomon would have been his family. You understand? So he ended up opposing his family becoming king because Solomon is the one that succeeded David, whereas though he was going to support David's third son, Absalom, to make him king because of the bitterness of what transpired. But this is why I say when we look at our family and how Yahweh has us set up and the dynamics here, we all have to love one another to that extent where we can't allow Satan to come in any way and color the way we see things. Because, you know, when people condition you to believe certain things, and it's normally the first person that comes to you and tell you a thing, you know, you have to listen to both sides to understand what's true and what's of Yahweh, okay? Because Satan is really going to try to get in there, and normally the first person gets to you, you know, to give you their side of the story is normally trying to sway you in a different direction, see? And that's why we have two or three witnesses before we judge a matter. So what we're going to do, I want you to turn over to 2 Samuel, and we're going to start in chapter 14, verse 21. Now, if in the future, well, actually, I didn't start where I wanted to go. I'm sorry. I told you to start there. We're not going to start there. Let's go back to 2 Samuel chapter 11. We just discussed that, okay? But all I want to do is look at verses 2 to 5. Because like I said, we know what happens, but it says, and it came to pass at evening that David arose from off his bed and walked upon the roof of the king's house. And from the roof he saw a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful to look upon. And David sent and inquired after the woman. And one said, is not that this Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite? So it's saying that she is the daughter of Eliam. So it doesn't say Ahithophel, because there's a couple of Eliams in the scriptures. And I believe maybe Ahithophel is the brother of Eliam, okay, which would make her the uncle. Because I think the scriptures do say that somewhere in there that he is her uncle, okay? So I don't know where these different scholars get their information. But we got that. And we know what happened with Uriah. And we know what happened in chapter 12, where Nathan the prophet comes to David. So we'll read this, turn over to chapter 12 and drop down to verse 7. When he gave David the story about the man and his ewe lamb, okay? And verse 7, and Nathan said to David, "You are the man. In this manner, says Yahweh, the Elohim of Israel, I anointed you king over Israel, and I delivered you out of the hand of Saul. And I gave you your master's house and your master's wives into your bosom, and gave you the house of Israel and of Judah. And if that had been too little, I would have added to you such and such things. Why have you despised the word of Yahweh to do that which is evil in his sight?" So David sinned, okay, which we all do. But see, this is the good part here. Even though he did sin, he says, "You have struck Uriah the Hittite with the sword and have taken his wife to be your wife and have killed him with the sword of the children of Ammon. Now, therefore, the sword shall never depart from your house, because you have despised me and have taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your wife. In this manner, says Yahweh, behold, I will raise up evil against you out of your own house." See? This is where Absalom comes in, the one that he loved the most. David's son, his third son that he loved the most. He says, "He will bring up evil out of your own house, and I will take your wives before your eyes and give them to your neighbor, and he shall lie with your wives in the sight of the sun, for you did it secretly with Bathsheba. But I will do this thing before all Israel and before the sun." And David said to Nathan, "I have sinned against Yahweh." And Nathan said, "Yahweh also has put away your sin. You shall not die. However, because of this deed, you have given great occasion to the enemies of Yahweh to blaspheme." And that's what happens when we go awry and we sin against Yahweh, especially, you know, in the eyes of the rest of the world. If we walk away and we do something, especially as a leader, you know, it gives the enemies of Yahweh an opportunity to blaspheme. And this is why it's very important for us to be faithful in all things that we do as Yahweh's people. Because when we do this, then the people around us are pointing the finger. "See, I told you. I told you they were sinners. They're this, they're a cult, they're that." You know, they look for reasons and ways to, you know, accuse you, because Satan is behind them trying to accuse the brethren. And that's important for us to understand. We have to be above reproach in everything we do. And I know it's difficult, but guess what? We represent, yeah, we're part of his family circle. So therefore, we have to live a life that is above the rest of the people. And hopefully, raise them up. See? Bring them up to that higher calling that we have. Because Yahweh has given us a higher calling. He wants us to be an example, just as Israel was an example. Where if you ever look at Jerusalem and look at the topography, you see Jerusalem is here, okay? And you got all these hills around. Then you got the valleys that go up. When you go down the Jordan from Jerusalem, Jerusalem's here, you're going down the Jordan. And it gets warmer and warmer as you go down. It's like coming down to the Gulf. You know, and say Jerusalem's here, you're going down like to the south to go to Jericho, but it's actually south. Yeah. Because when you go to the west, you're going toward the Philistines, to Gaza. But you have these mountains like that are around Jerusalem. You got the Mount of Olives, and, you know, you have the valleys in between, okay? Fertile valleys. But there are all these mountains around Jerusalem. But Jerusalem sits high above. It's on like a hill. So when you go by what you would call like here at U.S. Route 1 or whatever, the main route that goes through Israel goes right by Jerusalem. And they can see. They saw that temple sitting up on the hill. And that temple was built for the name of Yahweh. So when the traders and everybody was going through from Africa to Assyria or to Babylonia or up towards, which would have been Asia, if they were going up towards Greece or to Rome, they would go by and they would see this gleaming gold temple. And most people would say, well, what is that? You know, what is that? And they're going to say, oh, that's the temple of Yahweh. See, it carried weight, you know, because like that handmaid that Naaman had in Syria working for him, and when he had leprosy, and she says, you know what? We have a prophet in Israel that could cure that. And his wife, okay. You know, and they got up from this little handmaid, and he ended up going to Israel getting healed. But the king of Israel at the time was like, they're trying to pick a fight with me. You know, they're sending me somebody to get healed. And then, but Elisha told him, yeah, there's a prophet in Israel that can heal him. See, the king, even the king of Israel, didn't have the faith or the belief in Yahweh that we got the prophet of Yahweh here. And sure enough, he healed Naaman, didn't he? He cleansed him of his leprosy. And the man was thankful, but he praised Yahweh for it. And that's what Yahweh wants each and every one of us to do, to have the people around us see that we are the worshipers of Yahweh and see if they have an issue. We put them on a prayer list. We put it before Yahweh. We ask Yahweh to heal them. And, you know, and this is one of the reasons Carol's friend Gail, I'm just so inspired by this woman. When I met her in New Orleans, she was very thankful to be there at services. She was rejoicing. And she was there in a wheelchair, her husband. I mean, they just inspired me by being there. And we anointed her, and I'm telling you, I heard her, and I can understand what she's saying on the phone. Even though it's not as clear as I'm speaking to you now, I understand what she's saying. And she's calling in. So Yahweh has done some great things for his people, and he's going to do even more as we get closer to Yahshua's second coming. And this is why we have to be a real tight family in this circle. We have to be an example to the people of the world, which David slipped on. But the thing I like about David, which Yahweh loved about him, he was repentant. He repented right away, not like Saul. Didn't make any excuses. He said, I've sinned. And that's what we have to do. If we fall before Yahweh, it says a righteous man falls seven times and rises yet again. And this is what people forget. I know in our former affiliation, they thought they were perfect and that they didn't sin. And if somebody sinned and you came and, oh, they're ready to kick you out. Oh, they're going to put you on probation for 7 years, a sabbatical cycle of 5 years or 3 years or whatever. I mean, you know, and you guess what? One of my best friends, you all know Dobie, right? Dobie was accused of something she didn't do, told him she didn't do it, put on probation for 3 years. Halfway through the 3 years, they found out Dobie was telling the truth. She didn't get a public apology. She didn't get anything from the pulpit saying we were wrong. You understand what I'm saying? They just swept it under the rug. You know, they wanted her to continue to, you know, to live out this sentence that she never deserved. She didn't get up and shout, you know, injustice. She was faithful to Yahweh. But things like that happened over there, okay? And what we have to do is we have to understand that Yahweh loves his people. And see, we don't accuse people of something. And she had false witnesses that turned around later and said they lied. You understand? But instead of, I don't know what they did to the false witnesses, but I'm telling you, they did not do what was right by her. And that was a tragedy in my eyes. So we have to be very attentive to Yahweh's commandments and his law. We have to be very attentive to his people. And we have to love one another. And if love was truly the order of the day, back in those days, it would not have been an issue. It would not have been a problem. Because those of us who knew Dobie knew that she was not that type of person. She was not going to lie, and she didn't, especially to the people who were her employers. She lived there on the property, and she worked there. And she had her whole life tied up in this faith. You know, and that really left a bad taste in her mouth. But she was still faithful after that until the point where YPTC came into existence and she decided, hey, you had to leave that alone because she saw that it wasn't, you know, right. They were actually the last tabernacle. She was there. She felt sick and she left. And they gave her hassle at the gate. Didn't want to let her out. Elder Meyer's still preaching. And she said, if you don't get out of my way, she's going to run somebody over. She was going back to the tent. And they hassled her, I mean, to her motel room. But they hassled her because she wasn't feeling well. And she wanted to leave. You know, I said, that's just not right, the way you treat people. You treat people the way you want to be treated. And that's what the Bible teaches, and that's what we teach. But David said, and this is the end of what he says in verse 14. He says, however, by this deed you have given great occasion to the enemies of Yahweh to blaspheme. The child also that is born to you shall surely die. And Nathan departed to his house. And Yahweh struck the child that Uriah's wife bore to David, and it was very sick. But David went into prayer, supplication to Yahweh, because he really wanted forgiveness, because, you know, he wanted, you know, that child to be healed. But the child wasn't healed. The child died. Okay, after seven, on the seventh day, the child died, in verse 18. And the servants of David feared to tell him that the child was dead, for they said, behold, while the child was yet alive, we spoke to him, and he listened not to our voice. How will he then vex himself if we tell him that the child is dead? But when David saw the servants were whispering together, David perceived that the child was dead. And David said to his servants, is the child dead? And they said, he is dead. Then David arose from the earth and washed, because he was in sackcloth and ashes. He was trying to get to Yahweh to ask for forgiveness, that, you know, but Yahweh had already forgiven him for his sin. But, see, there's also consequences for our sin. And that's something that we have to look at. We have to think about, okay? There's a price to pay. And David arose from the earth and washed and anointed himself and changed his apparel. And he came to the house of Yahweh and worshipped. Then he came to his own house, and when he required, they set bread before him, and he ate. Because he had been fasting before. The whole time he had been fasting, hoping that Yahweh would hear his prayers. Then his servant said to him, what thing is this that you have done? You fasted and wept for the child while it was alive, but when the child was dead, you arose and ate bread. And he said, while the child was yet alive, I fasted and wept. For I said, who knows whether Yahweh will be gracious to me, if he'll hear me, and that the child may live. But now he is dead, why should I fast? Can I bring him back again? I shall go to him, but he will not return to me. The child had died, and David comforted Bathsheba, his wife, and went into her and lay with her, and she bore a son, and he called his name Solomon. And Yahweh loved him, and he sent by the hand of Nathan the prophet, and he called his name Yedidiah, for Yahweh's sake. See? So he had a second chance, and this son is the one that Yahweh chose, okay? Now, we're going to go over to chapter 13. We'll start in verse 1. It says, this is about the rape of Tamar, who was Absalom's sister. Okay? And we also, I mean, I'm not saying that any of us are perfect in our houses, but if you think about it, family is probably the worst against family, because some uncles are messing with their and stuff like that, and these things go on. Incest was a real deal, okay? But see, here you had brother, you know, and like a half-sister or whatever, and it was okay for them to marry even at that time in Israel, as long as they were different, well, normally of the same tribe, but to an extent, they were trying to keep the inheritance, the bloodlines the same. But let's just get into it. In verse 1:13, it says, "And it came to pass after this that Absalom, the son of David, had a fair sister, a beautiful sister, okay, whose name was Tamar. And Amnon, the son of David, loved her. And Amnon was so vexed that he fell sick because of his sister Tamar. For she was a virgin, and it seemed hard to Amnon to do anything to her. But Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimea, David's brother." Okay, so he's still in the family, you see here? This is his uncle, right? And Jonadab was a very subtle man. And he said to him, "Why, O son of the king, are you thus lean from day to day? Will you not tell me?" And Amnon said to him, "I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister." Okay? And Jonadab said to him, "Lay down on your bed and pretend yourself to be sick," feign or pretend. "And when your father comes to see you, say to him, 'Let my sister Tamar come, I pray you, and give me bread to eat and dress the food in my sight, that I may see her and eat it from her hand.'" So Amnon lay down and pretended himself to be sick. And when the king came to see him, he said to the king, "Let my sister Tamar come, and I pray you, and make me a couple of cakes in my sight, that I may eat from her hand." So David did it. He sent home to Tamar and said, "You know, come serve your brother. Go down to your brother Amnon's house and prepare food for him." And Tamar went to her brother Amnon's house, and he was lying down, and she took dough and kneaded it and made cakes in his sight and baked the cakes, and she took the pan and poured them out before him, but he refused to eat. Remember, he's pretending. And Amnon said, "Send out all the men from me." And they went out, every man from him, because they had servants. These were princes in Israel. These were the king's son and daughter. And they went out, every man from him. And Amnon said to Tamar, "Bring the food into the chamber, that I may eat from your hand." And Tamar took the cakes which she had made and brought them into the chamber to Amnon, her brother. And when she had brought them near to him to eat, he took hold of her and said to her, "Come, lie with me, my sister." And she answered him, "No, my brother, do not force me, for no such thing ought to be done in Israel. Do not this folly." See? Remember, I said one of the definitions of Ahithophel was brother of ruin or folly. This all ties in together. Okay? "And I, where shall I carry my shame? And for you, you will be as one of the fools in Israel. Now, therefore, I pray you, speak to the king, for he will not withhold me from you." In other words, if you ask for my hand in marriage, he'll give it. No. "However, he would not listen to her voice, but being stronger than her, he forced her and lay with her." Okay? "And then Amnon hated her with very great hatred, for the hatred which he hated her was greater than the love which he had loved her." Because he was just lusting after his beautiful sister. See? "Now he hated her. And Amnon said to her, 'Arise, be gone.' And she said to him, 'Not so, because this great wrong in putting me forth is worse than the other than you did to me.' But he would not listen to her. Then he called his servants that ministered to him and said, 'Now, put this woman out from me.'" He really did. His hate for her was worse than his love. And this is his own sister. Not close, but still flesh. "And bolt the door after her. And she had a garment of diverse colors upon her, for with such robes were the king's daughters that were virgins clothed. Then his servants brought her out and bolted the door after her. And Tamar put ashes on her head and rent her garment of diverse colors that was on her. And she laid her hand on her head and went her way crying aloud as she went. And Absalom, her brother, said to her, 'Has Amnon, your brother, been with you?' But now, hold your peace, my sister. He is your brother. Do not take this thing to heart. So Tamar remained desolate in her brother Absalom's house. They all had their own houses. But when the king David heard all these things, he was very angry. And he should have been, right? And Absalom spoke to Amnon neither good nor bad, for Absalom hated Amnon because he had forced his sister Tamar. He did something, he violated her. And of course, his anger was righteous indeed. But it should have been dealt with. And as we go on down in the story, it says in verse 23, and it came to pass after 2 full years. See, this thing went on for some time. It didn't happen the next day, the next week. It went on after some time. And Absalom had planned what he wanted to do. He said that Absalom had sheep shearers in Baal Hazor, which is beside Ephraim. And Absalom invited all the king's sons, and Absalom came to the king and said, behold now, your servant has sheep shearers. Let the king, I pray you, and his servants go with your servant. And the king said to Absalom, no, my son, let us not all go, lest we be burdensome to you. And he pressed him, however, he would not go, but he blessed him. And Absalom said, if not, I pray you, let my brother Amnon go with us. And the king said to him, why should he go with you? But Absalom pressed him, and he let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him. Not just Amnon, but the rest of them as well. And Absalom commanded his servants, saying, mark you now, when Amnon's heart is merry with wine, and when I say to you, strike Amnon, then kill him. Fear not, have I not commanded you? Be courageous and be valiant. And the servants of Absalom did to Amnon as Absalom had commanded. Then all the king's sons arose. Every man got up on his mule and fled. Because in those days, if one of the king's sons wanted to be king, the first thing he did was wipe out all the rest of his brethren. That's what they did. They didn't have any competition. They would be next in line to be king. But that's not what Absalom did. He only killed Amnon. He was repaying him for what he did to his sister. Okay? And in verse 30 it says, and it came to pass while they were in the way that the tidings came to David, saying, Absalom has killed all the king's sons, and there is not one left. So that was a false report. Then the king arose and rent his garments and lay on the earth, and all the servants stood by with their clothes rent. And Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother, answered and said, let not my sovereign suppose that they have killed all the young men, the king's sons, for Amnon only is dead. For by the appointment of Absalom, this has been determined from the day that he forced his sister Tamar. Now, therefore, let not my sovereign, the king, take this thing to heart to think that all the king's sons are dead, for only Amnon is dead. And then Absalom fled. The young man that kept the watch lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, there came many people by the way of the hillside behind him. And Jonadab said to the king, behold, the king's son hath come. As your servant said, so it is. And it came to pass, as soon as they had made an end of speaking, that behold, the king's son came and lifted up their voice and wept. And the king also and all his servants wept with very great weeping. Now, were they weeping for Amnon or weeping for Absalom? It tells you in the next passage here, it says, but Absalom fled and went to Talmai, the son of Ammihur, king of Geshur. And David mourned for his son every day. So Absalom fled and went to Geshur, and there was there 3 years. And the soul of King David longed to go forth to Absalom, for he was comforted. He was comforted concerning Amnon, seeing he was dead. But see, this is showing you something that, yes, he lost a son, but he lost 2 sons because Absalom left. He loved Absalom. That was his favorite. But Yahweh's favorite was Solomon. You can read chapter 14 on down to verse 25 yourself. We're going to go to chapter 14, verse 25. We have to understand and remember that in Yahweh's family circle, you're going to have issues between brethren. And those issues have to be solved according to Matthew 18. Okay? And instead of waiting 2 years, like Absalom did, he should have confronted Amnon right away. David knew what was going on. This whole thing just festered, and it created a problem in Israel. You had Ahithophel, who had bad feelings for David, who was David's counselor, but when David had did what he did with Bathsheba, Ahithophel had a problem with that. See? And when Absalom came back into the picture, Ahithophel became his counselor against David, and that was splitting the kingdom. See? But Yahweh was the one, and Yahweh is always going to come through because he's the one that is in control of all things. He might allow certain things to get by. He might allow Satan to have a little over here. But you know what? Yahweh's will is going to be done in the end, every time. And that's why we have to have faith in him. And everything we do, we have to trust him, because in this, and we'll see it, chapter 14, verse 25, it says, "Now all Israel, there was none to be so much praised as Absalom for his beauty. From the sole of his foot even to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him." See, he was a very handsome man, just like his sister was a very fair lady, beautiful lady. Now, it says, "And when he cut the hair of his head, now it was that at every year's end that he cut it, because it was heavy on him, therefore he cut it. He weighed the hair of his head at 200 shekels in the king's weight. And to Absalom there was born 3 sons and 1 daughter, whose name was Tamar. She was a woman of a beautiful appearance," named after her aunt, obviously. "And Absalom," in verse 28, "dwelt 2 years in Jerusalem, and he did not see the king's face." That's after he came back. So this is 5 years that he had been gone. 3 years he went to his hometown of his mother's birth, to his grandfather, who was king of Geshur, and then 2 years in Jerusalem. So he hadn't seen King David for 5 years. And then in verse 29, "Absalom sent for Joab to send him to the king, but he would not come to him. And he sent again a second time, but he would not come. Therefore he said to his servant, 'See, Joab's field is near mine, and he has barley there. Go and set it on fire.'" Now Joab was Absalom's uncle. Okay? Joab, put this right. No, I'm sorry. He was Absalom's cousin. Joab and his brothers were David's sister's son, the sons of Zeruiah. Okay? And Absalom is his son, so that would make them cousins, right? All right? "And Absalom's servants set the field on fire, and Joab arose and came to Absalom to his house and said to him, 'Why have your servants set my field on fire?' And Absalom answered Joab, 'Behold, I sent you, saying, Come here, that I may send you to the king, to say, Why have I come from Geshur? It would have been better for me to still be there. Now, therefore, let me see the king's face, and if there is sin in me, iniquity in me, let him kill me.' So Joab came to the king and told him, and when he had called for Absalom, he came to the king and bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king, and the king kissed Absalom." He missed his son. He loved his son. You know, but it gets deeper, because Absalom's heart had also changed. It had turned. When Satan gets in, it's not hard, when you have some things that are not right within your heart, to turn you, you know. And see, Absalom was playing a game. Even though he knew his father loved him, he was planning on revolting, taking the kingdom for himself. Joab, with his you know, mighty man of valor, or his minister of war. He was his general. And what did Absalom do? He went to Joab. He got Joab's confidence. Worked with Joab. He got Joab to send this woman to David to try to convince her to let Absalom come back, you know, from Geshur. See, so these things that are going on underneath the surface, these are plots. And you have to be smart enough or have enough of Yahweh's Holy Spirit to be able to recognize when Satan is doing what? He's dividing and conquering. That's all he did. He went here, he went there, and he went over here. So after he got Joab, who is the leader of the army, the general, who did he go after? He went after Ahithophel. Chapter 15. Read the beginning of it later yourself. Okay? Verse 7. It says, and it came to pass at the end of 40 years that Absalom said to the king, I pray you, let me go and pay my vow, which I have vowed to Yahweh in Hebron. For your servant vowed a vow while I remained at Geshur in Syria, saying, if Yahweh shall indeed bring me again to Jerusalem, then I will serve Yahweh. And the king said, go in peace. Remember what Absalom's name meant? What did Absalom's name mean? Right. Ab his father, Shalom, Shalom, peace. My father's peace. He said, go in peace. So he arose and went to Hebron, but Absalom sent spies throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, as soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then you shall say, Absalom is king in Hebron. And with Absalom went 200 men out of Jerusalem that were invited, and went in their simplicity, and they knew not anything. And Absalom sent for Ahithophel, the Gileonite, David's counselor, from his city, even from Gilo, while he was offering the sacrifices, and the conspiracy was strong, and the people increased continually with Absalom. And then messengers came to David, saying, the hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom. And David said to all his servants that were with him in Jerusalem, arise, let us flee, else none of us shall escape from Absalom. Make speed to depart, lest he overtake us quickly. Because David realized that he meant to take the kingdom. And for him to take the kingdom, that meant David had to die. Now, even though David loved his son, he realized that, you know, he had to make a move to preserve his life. And he did. See? But David was a man after Yahweh's own heart. He truly trusted Yahweh. And he knew that Solomon was supposed to be king, not Absalom, and that Yahweh would overturn them. So they did. They fled. And drop down to chapter 15. And lo, Zadok came, also came, and all the Levites with him, bearing the Ark of the Covenant of Elohim. And they set down the Ark of Elohim, and Abiathar went up until all the people had finished passing out of the city. And the king said to Zadok, carry back the Ark of Elohim into the city. If I shall find favor in the eyes of Yahweh, he will bring me again and show me both it and his habitation. But if he says thus, I have no delight in you, behold, here I am. Let him do to me as seems good to him. The king also said to Zadok, the priest, are you not a seer? Return into the city in peace, and you, your two sons with you, Ahimaaz, your son, and Jonathan, the son of Abiathar. See, I will wait at the forks of the wilderness until there comes word from you to certify me. Zadok, therefore, and Abiathar carried the Ark of Elohim again to Jerusalem, and they remained there. And David went up by the ascent of the Mount of Olives and wept as he went up. See, he was going up from Jerusalem up to the Mount of Olives, and they wept. And he had his head covered, and went barefoot, and all the people that were with him covered every man his head, and they went up, weeping as they went up. And one told David, saying, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. And David said, O Yahweh, I pray you turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. That's his, that goes with his, what his name means, folly, ruin. And Ahithophel was a very wise man. He gave Absalom excellent counsel. But guess what? Absalom wouldn't hear it. He wouldn't accept it. If he would have followed Ahithophel's counsel, they would have killed David and took the kingdom. But they rejected his counsel. See? Yahweh did turn his good counsel into foolishness because they wouldn't listen to him. And it came to pass when David had come to the top of the ascent where Elohim was worshipped, he behold, Hushai, the Archite, came up to meet him with his coat rent and earth upon his head. And David said to him, if you pass on with me, then you will be a burden to me. But if you return to the city to say to Absalom, I will be your servant, O king, as I have been your father's servant in times past, so will I now be your servant. Then will you defeat for me the counsel of Ahithophel. And that's what happened. He had a spy within Absalom's camp because he stayed. So as we move on, we're going to go all the way over to chapter 17. And you can read this, the instances that we're passing over in the middle later at your own time. Because when you read the story, it moves your heart. It makes you think about David and what Yahweh told him, how he would raise his own seed against out of his own house for his sin. See? But Yahweh still loved David, even though David had sinned against him. And Yahweh remembered David. And 2 Samuel 17, moreover, Ahithophel said to Absalom, let me now choose out 12,000 men, and I will arise and pursue after David this night, and I will come on him while he is weary and weak-handed, and will make him afraid, and all the people that are with him shall flee, and I will strike down the king only, and I will bring back all the people to you. The man whom you seek is as if all return, so all the people shall be in peace, and shall the saying please Absalom well and all the elders in Israel. But then Absalom said, call now Hushai the Archite also, and let us hear likewise what he says. So he wanted another opinion. And guess what opinion he got? He got the opinion that David wanted him to get. See? Because he took that counsel of Ahithophel, which was good counsel, and turned it around. And he put the fear of King David in Absalom's heart. In verse 10, he said, starting verse 9, it says, behold, he is hid now in some pit or in some other place, and it will come to pass when some of them are fallen at first that whoever hears it will say, there is a slaughter among the people that follow Absalom, and even he that is valiant, whose heart is as the heart of a lion. Tribe of Judah, David, will utterly melt. For all Israel knows that your father is a mighty man, a giver, Khalil, a mighty man, and they that are with him are valiant men. So he put the fear of Yahweh in Absalom's heart. And Absalom then took the counsel of Hushai, the Archite, okay? And they just let Ahithophel's counsel go to waste, which was good counsel. And if they would have followed it, he would have defeated David. But they didn't. See? Now, turn over to 17, verse 24. No, I'm sorry. 21. Let's go to 21. 17:21. It says, and it came to pass after they departed, that they came up out of the well and went and told the king David. And they said to David, arise and pass quickly over the water, for thus has Ahithophel counseled against you. And David arose and all the people that were with him, and they passed over the Jordan by the morning light. There was not one lacking that had not gone over the Jordan. And when Ahithophel saw that his counsel was not followed, he saddled his ass and arose and went home to his city and set his house in order and hanged himself. And he died and was buried in the sepulcher of his father. And in verse 24, then David came to Mahanaim, and Absalom passed over the Jordan, and all the men of Israel with him, and Absalom set Amasa over the host instead of Joab. Now Amasa was the son of a man whose name was Ithra the Israelite, that went into Abigail, the daughter of Naash, sister of Zeruiah, Joab's mother. See, this is all going back to family. You see how tight this is. All of these people are related, and they're going back and forth after one another. And Israel and Absalom encamped in the land of Gilead. And it came to pass when David had come to Mahanaim that Shobi, the son of Naash of Rabbah, of the children of Amnon, and Machir, the son of Amiel of Lodabar, and Barzillai, the Gileadite, and Rogelium brought beds and basins and earthen vessels and wheat and barley and meal and parched grain and beans and lentils and parched vegetables and honey and butter and sheep and cheese of the herd for David and for the people that were with him to eat. For they said, the people are hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. But Yahweh fed them. He strengthened them. Chapter 18, I'm going to drop down to verse 9. Well, start in verse 6, it says, so the people went out into the field against Israel, and the battle was in the forest of Ephraim. And the people of Israel were defeated before the servants of David, and there was a great slaughter there that day of 20,000 men. For the battle was there spread over the face of all the country, and the forest devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. The forest devoured more people than the sword. Who was fighting for David? Yahweh. Yahweh fought for David. See, because Absalom was completely wrong in what he was doing. In verse 9, it says, Absalom happened to meet the servants of David, and Absalom was riding upon his mule, and his mule went under the thick boughs of a great oak, and his head caught hold of the oak, and he was taken up between heaven and earth, and the mule was under him, went on. And a certain man saw it and told Joab and said, behold, I saw Absalom hanging in an oak. And Joab said to the man that told him, and behold, you saw it? And why didn't you strike him there to the ground? And I would have given you 10 pieces of silver and a girdle. And the man said to Joab, though I should receive 1,000 pieces of silver in my hand, yet I would not put forth my hand against the king's son. For in our hearing the king charged you and Abishai and Ittai, saying, beware that no one touches the young man Absalom. And that was David's decree. He still loved his son, even though this man was trying to take his life. He loved his son. That's what's so important here. When you think about Yahweh and his family, you know, David was the king, but he loved his son. Verse 13, it says, otherwise, if I had dealt falsely against his life, and there is no matter hid from the king. In other words, David would have found out. And then I would have been dead. Then yourself would have set yourself against me. And Joab said, I may not wait like this with you. And he took 3 darts of his hand and thrust them through the heart of Absalom while he was yet alive in the middle of the oak. And 10 young men that bore Joab's armor surrounded and struck Absalom and killed him. So Joab put him to death. And Joab, like I said, he was a sly individual, but he was really dirty. You know, and David knew this. He was a mighty warrior, and David wanted him on his side because he was a mighty warrior, but he killed a couple good people, a lot better than himself. The scriptures bear that out. And Joab blew the trumpet, and the people returned from pursuing after Israel, and Joab held back the people, and they took Absalom and cast him into the great pit in the forest and raised over him a very great heap of stones, and all Israel fled, every one to his tent. Now Absalom in his lifetime had taken and reared up for himself the pillar, which is in the king's valley, for he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. And he called the pillar after his own name, and it was called Absalom's Monument to this day. But this whole thing about Yahweh's circle, as you see Ahithophel being related to Bathsheba and being turned away from her seed who was promised a kingdom, who ended up inheriting it because Solomon took over and became king of Israel. Each one of us, as Yahweh's people, have a purpose, have a part of Yahweh's family circle. Each one of us have a direction that Yahweh wants us to go in. We have a job to do, each one of us. And as we go forth, we have to think about what Yahweh wants us to do and how we're going to accomplish that goal. And if we love one another, our brethren, a lot more than this family, you know, was loving each other. Because what they did, you think about all of the intrigue and what they were going behind each other's back and doing this, and, you know, Absalom to Ahithophel and Absalom to Joab and Jonadab. It was a big soap opera. But the thing is, it was very, very real. People's lives hung in the balance. And people died because of what happened here. But Yahweh comes through every time. And what his purpose is going to be established. And he promised that Solomon would be king. See, and David told Bathsheba, yes, he'll be king. And what happened? Solomon became king. So Yahweh's word is going to come to pass regardless. And if we know what Yahweh wants us to do, and we do, he told us what to do. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall inherit. We're going to be in the kingdom of Yahweh if we do his will, and if we keep his covenant, and if we love our brethren. And I'll read these Beatitudes real quick to end this, because Yahshua has given us an example. It says in Matthew 5:3, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Ha'aretz. Blessed are they that hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. And blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. And if we teach and we show mercy to one another and to those who need to hear Yahweh's truth, we will receive that mercy back. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see Yahweh. And we hope to see Yahweh, brethren, each and every one of us. And blessed are the peacemakers, in verse 9, for they shall be called the sons of Elohim. And we are trying to make peace with those who are opposed to themselves. People don't realize that they're opposed to themselves. And that's what was going on in David's kingdom. They didn't all follow David. Some, a lot of them, obviously, you know, lit out the left side. They were following Absalom, who was, you know, the John Wayne type or whatever they call him, you know, the movie star. You know, maybe it's the Ronald Reagan type. You know, these guys that look good on the screen, you know, the movie star type. People follow them, see, because they look good. And Absalom obviously was a very handsome man, very fair, I'm sure, good to look at. So they thought, well, this should be our king. You know, I don't know what Solomon looked like. I really don't. I mean, it describes him in the Song of Solomon and some other places. But guess what? He was Yahweh's choice. And I'm telling you right now that each and every one of us is Yahweh's choice for the kingdom. Because it says in verse 10, blessed are they that have been persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when men shall reproach you and persecute you and say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be very glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so persecuted they the prophets that were before you. And truly, Yahweh is with his people, his family circle. Each one of us has to uphold the other. We have to do things for each other. We have to watch out for each other. You know, I'm thankful for Carol. She helps a lot with this ministry. A lot of things that we want to do, she's there for us. Same with Cheryl, Al, Willie. I didn't call on David. Maybe in the future, David, but we're glad you're here. You know, we're glad you're here. But we gotta work towards, you know, bringing everybody together and lifting each other up. And see, that's where the love of Yahweh comes in. See, because even in this family of David, David loved Absalom. I'm sure he loved Solomon too. Just like he loved Tamar and he loved his son Amnon that was killed. But we have to love the people of Yahweh as well as the people out there. Because that love for those people out there is to bring them into Yahweh's family circle. We want those people to come. We want them to be saved. We don't want them to be lost. Yahweh doesn't want anyone to perish. See? That's why we have a great job to do. And I know as long as we love Yahweh, we're going to complete that mission. Because we're going to put forth the effort to make it happen. May Almighty Yahweh bless you as you continue to serve him and be a part of Yahweh's family circle. At this time, I'd like to ask Brother Charlie, I wanted to catch you before you sat down. Would you come close with a word of prayer and not forget the brethren on the prayer list? Would you all please rise at this time?
Father Yahweh, thank you for bringing us all together again today for a good service, and we thank you for everything that you do for us, because only you and you alone can heal and do other things that we need doing for. And I thank you in Yahshua's most holy name. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.